Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, is here again with us this morning. Dr. Stern, it's always a pleasure to have you. We always get great information. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Ted. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you. Just off the presses here, a press release from the Rappahannock Area Health District, the first case of multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children. Now, we should say that the child has recovered. But I looked at this, and we have talked about this before, but to have one of these cases in this area kind of jolts you a little bit.
Sure, Ted. You know, this actually was identified in New York a couple of months ago, I believe the first case. And it's a fairly rare condition, though seems to be associated with COVID-19. So what is multi-inflammatory syndrome in children? It seems to be this condition that's related to a deregulation of the immune system. And what that means is our internal defense system, which is supposed to defend us against invading organisms, bacteria, viruses, so on and so forth, gets out of whack and starts kind of attacking our own body tissues. And so it creates this remarkable inflammatory process that may impact the heart, the lungs, the kidneys, the brain, skin, eyes. You know, that's why it's called multi-system.
Yeah.
So these children usually present with a fever, and all kinds of different symptoms. It may be abdominal related, gastrointestinal related, with pain and vomiting and diarrhea. They'll sometimes have neck pain. A lot of them will have some kind of a rash. But there's nothing classic to this yet. It's not that well defined. Bloodshot eyes red eyes and feeling really tired. And these are usually children between the ages of 5 to 15. And why that age group, you know, this has not been figured out. This, again, coronavirus is a novel virus. We're learning about this and how it may affect the bodies. I mean, the research on this, and there's a lot of people, a lot of institutions now trying to get a better handle on this and look at the science behind it, still aren't definitive that it is COVID-19, but there seems to be a very high relationship between a prior infection of COVID-19 and multisystem inflammatory syndrome. So parents, if their children are really sick with these kinds of, you know, rash, fever, gastrointestinal symptoms, they ought to call their doctor, talk to their doctor. I don't expect that this will be some kind of new outbreak in our community. This is one child in the last, 4 months of this COVID-19 outbreak. But it is reasonable for primary care physicians, pediatricians, emergency room physicians to be aware, and for parents to be aware that this could happen, especially if your child has had COVID-19 or has been exposed to others who have had COVID-19.
Boy, and again, it's a good reminder that the community, we all are susceptible to the coronavirus, and this remains a serious situation, Dr. Stern.
Well, that's true, because it does impact us all. You know, Ted, you and I spent a lot of time talking about the elderly and those with underlying medical conditions, and those still remain the most concern to me, because 80% of the folks who die from this disease are over the age of 65. That's nationwide. But I'll remind you that over 98% of the folks recover from this illness. So it could be a bad bug. You could be very sick. You could have serious flu-like symptoms, but 98% of the folks recover. And we've been talking about how this really is a disease of the elderly, but here's a case where, a child is severely impacted and was in the hospital for some time.
Yeah, and boy, and I remember we in the early days when we were first back in March or early April when we were talking and we discussed this. And again, it's one of those situations where you hear about it and you think, well, that's in New York, and you don't. It's an interesting story, but all of a sudden, when we get one here, you get a case here, and all of a sudden, you do see that we're all susceptible to this.
Right. This is real. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, it kind of points to, Ted, another one of our ongoing messages, and that is the value of everybody continuing to participate in protecting themselves and others from the spread of this disease. Washing hands, wearing a mask, social distancing, cleaning surfaces. These are four practices that everyone can participate in that'll help us to continue to lower the curve, to slow the spread of this disease, and help us all make it through till we get this vaccine, hopefully the end of this year.
I like how you say participate. I that's what we're going to talk about. That's how we're going to approach it that way. That we all do need to participate, because you kind of see that there is maybe a little bit. We're getting a little bit lax at times. I've noticed it going around, and so we need 100% participation in this.
We do, and I think a lot of businesses have now finally come around. They're requiring their staff to wear masks and encouraging their patrons to wear masks. I remember, a month ago going into Lowe's, and it was like a joke. And the staff, I'd even ask the staff, "Where's your mask?" And they'd say, "I don't need no mask."
Yeah.
Now everybody's wearing a mask. They've got it down, and it's okay. I mean, it's not that big a deal. The mask, as you know, is to slow the respiratory droplets from coming from you and spreading to others, to keep those in, to reduce the spread of the respiratory droplets from you to other people. In other words, to keep you from spreading the disease to others. Because remember, there's a substantial amount of this disease is asymptomatic. So you could be sick and not even know it, and transmit the disease to others and not even know it. So a good way to prevent that is wear your mask, wash your hands, use your hand sanitizer.
And when you a couple of weeks ago we were talking about businesses, and you mentioned, I think it was the Hanover Tavern, you said it had done a good job with things. And I came across, you feel safer going into places like that. Just being over at the Colonial Tavern here off of Lafayette Boulevard, they really take this seriously. And when you do see businesses like that that do step up and you feel safe, you want to be able to direct people to them and support them, just because not all businesses, you don't always feel so safe in some businesses.
I absolutely agree, and appreciate those who participate. And, this isn't, I don't see it so much the government forcing something down my throat and making me do something I don't want to do. I see it as more my civic responsibility, my community responsibility, my moral. you could almost take it to, this is kind of a moral ethical issue where I'm helping to prevent the spread of this disease to other people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's as simple as that. Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. We will continue on. Need to take a break. We'll be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
opinions. We've all got them. And we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, is with us again on this Friday morning. Boy, Dr. Stern, when you look at the numbers and you hear about what's happening, especially in Arizona, Texas, and Florida, boy, it makes you want to, around here, you know, have people wear masks and do things, because our numbers are pretty good around here. But you look at some parts around the country, it really is concerning that it has flared up like it has.
Well, Ted, you are correct. In Virginia and in our health district, the numbers are pretty much plateaued. That is, they're not going up. They're not going down. We're getting about 15 to 20 new cases a day. in the last couple of days, our hospitalization numbers have been up a little bit, but that's a reporting artifact. Unfortunately, the way our hospital numbers get entered into the system is based on the day in which the hospitalization was reported, not the day in which the person was hospitalized. So we need to figure that out. I think it creates some confusion. However, if you look at the number of people who are in the hospital any one time, it's pretty much stable right now in our health district, 25 to 30 folks. And it's been that way for the last month. It's really dropped in half in the last month, the number of cases, the percent positivity, hospitalizations. And that's pretty consistent statewide. So I think it's largely because we've been serious about encouraging folks to participate in helping to prevent the spread of disease, wearing masks, washing hands, using hand sanitizer, cleaning contact surfaces, social distancing. But in these other states, it's not. I think that's probably not been the practice. I mean, you look at Florida, Texas, Arizona. California has a huge population, so you would expect a lot of cases in California and in New York. But these other states that were pretty had settled down, kind of taken off again, and I think, you know, it's probably because of two things. One is increasing availability of testing. So just with increasing testing, you're now offering it to folks who are asymptomatic, the worried well, so and so forth, and you're going to find more disease. That's part of it. But also, I think with relaxing these mitigation strategies that have been put in place to slow the spread of disease, as those are relaxed, people get out more, there's more interaction amongst people, more opportunity then for the virus to spread from person to person. So that may be part of our problem as well right now.
And again, it goes back to, like you say, we've got to be vigilant with this. We've got to participate and in do these things, or you know, you just don't want to get up some morning and see the numbers starting to rise here, because like you say, for the last month or so we have been in really good shape. Are the hospital numbers? I don't know. You may not even know this. In some of these states with the high numbers, is there a concern about beds in some of these areas?
No. I've heard no reports about shortages of beds. No, I've not heard that.
Okay.
Though that's a soft response, okay? it's not a researched response.
Yeah, I understand.
I've been paying close attention to what's going on in Planning District 16.
Yep.
Stafford, Caroline, King George, Spotsylvania County, City of Fredericksburg. I frankly don't look at the numbers for the state or for the other states. I do to prepare for this
our little chat,
Ted, but otherwise, my focus is really on my health district, and I appreciate our citizens and their cooperation with helping us to prevent the spread of this disease, so that we can ride this out, make it to the end of this year or early next year when we have a vaccine, and then folks getting the vaccine. That's going to be a whole nother issue. You know, there's this talk now, oh, you're going to get the vaccine. How do you know what's in that?
And, exactly.
You know, that's just another government way of controlling us. No, it's a way to prevent the spread of this disease. And there's a substantial amount of research being done worldwide, over 100 companies now. And I expect some of it is profit motivated, because you can imagine if you're the company that comes up with this vaccine, you're going to make some money. But a number of those companies have been subsidized to help them with their research, to encourage cooperation amongst laboratories and pharmaceutical companies as they do this research, to produce a vaccine quickly, to get it tested quickly, have a reasonable amount of human testing then done before it's put out there in the general public.
Well, and I have been so surprised in recent weeks, and it continues on, because at first when I would mention that, you know, I'll be first in line, I got some pushback on it, and people saying, and just like you say, and now I hear more and more, and the more people I talk to about this, the more I think there is going to have to be a big campaign to push for this, because this is turning into something like a lot of the same things you hear about the flu shot.
Well, that, you know, a lot of that is historical fear.
Yeah,
I guess, and it's absolutely unfounded. The flu vaccine is a very, very safe vaccine. It does not cause flu disease. It can't do that because it's not a live virus.
Oh, but I know thousands of people who will say to me, I always get sick. And I agree.
Well, you know, and what's the flu vaccine do? It has some of the proteins associated with the flu virus that stimulate the immune system. So that illness that folks feel is the stimulation of their immune system as if they have disease. So they may have certainly some local pain associated where the vaccine was given, some local discomfort, maybe a little fever. And there's a few folks who will have a more severe immune reaction, but that's very uncommon, and most people tolerate the vaccine very well, and I expect the same for this vaccine also. So you say you're going to be the first in line. I guess I'll let you have the first seat, okay? Because I was going to say I'll be the first in line.
Well, you and me will be one and two, and we'll be right there at the front of the line. Now you just think you've said from the start that this is the corona COVID-19 is not the flu, and you don't want to get this.
That's right. You know, most people handle COVID-19 very well. The research on that now, from China through Europe and the U.S. data, most folks handle this very well. In fact, as much as maybe half of the disease is asymptomatic in its form. So you get infected, your body recognizes the virus, fights it off, and you don't even feel any symptoms. And some people have, you know, mild cold or flu-like symptoms. In the outbreak that we had in our office, we had 10 folks who tested positive. And interestingly, Ted, we saw the gamut of illness. One staff, you know, who said, oh, well, I kind of felt bad for a couple of days, but I'm doing okay. And another one, you know, the one person who out of 10 who really was ill said she was miserable. She had different symptoms every day, from fever that would not respond to antipyretics, to headaches, and then dizziness, and did end up in the hospital, and is now home, discharged at home. But there's this full gamut of symptoms associated with this disease, but most people handle it pretty well. But I would not want to have the disease myself. I would much rather have the vaccine.
Yeah. So I guess you'll win when there is a vaccine, and like you said before, we don't know yet how it will be dispersed, but it will be there'll be a big campaign, I'm sure, to get us all to take the vaccine.
Oh, sure. This will be a campaign like you've never seen before. And, you know, we'll have those folks who say, oh, there goes the government again, trying to force something upon us. You know, nobody's going to force anybody to take the vaccine. I don't know if it might become an exclusion to school, participation in school.
Yeah.
That's a possibility. However, nobody's going to force you otherwise to take the vaccine. I think it's a wise choice instead of having the disease. So the private sector will be, I expect, will be highly involved. You can imagine right now, every pharmacy on the corner now is offering all different kinds of vaccines. I'm hoping that they will be involved and other medical providers as well, because there's no way that the Rappahannock Area Health District will be able to deliver the volume of vaccine that's necessary, really, to provide protection for our community. So we're looking forward to a very broad campaign. This is going to require a lot of vaccine, and I don't know how these manufacturers are going to pump out that volume of vaccine so quickly. I think it'll be probably come as a phased approach, so that the first folks who'll get the vaccine will be medical providers, the vaccinators, medical providers. Secondly, will probably be the elderly, those who are at most risk for severe disease. And along in there will be the, our first responders, fire and rescue folks, police. Elderly and those with underlying medical conditions will be first to get this vaccine. So I suspect the campaign will be rolled out in that kind of manner that will prioritize the early shipments of vaccine to those who are at highest risk and medical providers and first responders.
Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. We will take a break and continue along this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's now 8:31.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Shuman.
Dr. Donald Stern here this morning, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. So, Dr. Stern, about 6, 7, 8 weeks ago now, you talked. We first started talking about schools. The health district has really been involved, and as I have talked to area superintendents, they all mention how they have worked with you and your staff, and just the help that you have been. Plans are all starting to come out now, and as we have said right from the start, this is going to be a much different school year, or at least the first 6 months are going to be much different than any of us are used to or have ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Schools are going to look very different for the next 6 months, at least, than what we're used to in the past. Our focus, of course, as a public health department, was not so much on the educational aspects, but more on the infection control aspects of reopening schools. So how do you reopen up a school so that you're minimizing the potential for spread of disease? So we talked about seating on the bus. We talked about, do you screen kids as they come into school? We talked about how you segregate kids in the building so that there's little mixing of children. You know, we're not filling hallways anymore. We're going to our classrooms and staying in our classrooms, distancing the desks. Now, these are not mandates, okay? These were recommendations we were making to the schools. I don't approve any of the schools' plans. We're simply advising them on what are sound disease control measures. And then secondly, not only are we prepared to open so that we minimize the spread of disease, but that what do we do when we learn that a teacher or student is COVID-19 positive or symptomatic for COVID-19? Do we throw up our hands and start screaming and tell everybody to run out of the building and close the school? No. There are sound practices that we can put into place to identify those who are definitely positive, guide them towards isolation, identify children who or other staff who may be at risk, provide quarantine guidance for them, and we can continue to run school. I see no reason for closing schools in general, but there may be a case where you may have to close a classroom. But even then, Ted, think about it. You've got a classroom where a child may turn up to be COVID-19 positive, and this is going to happen. I can tell you with COVID-19 being endemic, we're going to have a situation, I'm sure, where some child or faculty member or staff is going to turn up being positive for COVID-19. But in that classroom, if they're distancing the desks and students are wearing masks, the risk of transmission is very low. So that gives me some reassurance that we don't have a major problem here. And secondly, children handle this disease pretty well.
Yeah. Look,
you know, it's just, as I said earlier, 80% of the deaths are to those 65 and older. The rest are spread out amongst other age groups, most of which are to children with underlying medical conditions. So that's one of the reasons why I've also advised that why don't we work out strategies to help those children who have underlying medical conditions to still stay at home for at least another 6 months until we get a vaccine, and then make sure they get the vaccine as soon as it comes out. But otherwise, not bring them to school. I've provided that advice to K-12 superintendents as well as to the University of Mary Washington, that see if you can work it out. And this is consistent with the CDC guidelines that we look at strategies to provide off-campus continuation of education for those who are at risk for a more severe form of this disease.
And you've talked about from the start about the how it's necessary to get parents prepared for all of this, and that's really one of the keys here.
Oh, it is. You know what drives fear and anxiety? A lot of it has to do with not knowing what the future holds, not knowing what's going on. So the more the schools can talk with parents, and I'm talking particularly 12 K through 12, and help them understand what measures they're putting into place to be prepared to open up schools and minimize transmission of disease, and what they're going to do if there is a COVID-19 case, so they can reassure parents that there's an effort to protect children and other faculty and staff in the school. I think that will go a long way in helping parents understand when that happens. Mm-hmm. They don't have to respond with fear and anxiety, but they know what the school is going to do. Working with the public health department, working with the family's primary care provider, other medical providers, and keeping our school safe and providing care for those children.
And don't forget about immunizations. I know the Rappahannock Area Health District over in the last week or so, you've on social media and around have been putting reminders out there. And don't forget the immunizations that your kids need to have, they still need to have.
Sure. Just like as always, Ted, there's a core set of vaccinations that are necessary for school attendance. And so we wanted to make sure that children are ready to attend school. This has nothing to do with COVID-19. This just has to do with school readiness that we've always done in the past, working with schools and families in our community to make sure that they have vaccines. Certainly go to your primary care provider and continue your children's vaccination schedule. But there are some cases where folks either don't have insurance or have difficulty getting to their primary care provider. So that's why we're setting up these special clinics to assist parents in getting vaccines for their children.
You know, it occurs to me, Dr. Stern, that always this time of year when we start getting near the opening of school, usually someone will come in and we'll do a show on getting your kids ready for school. And you talk about how to, you know, especially younger kids, give them a tray and have them walk around and just talk to your kids about getting ready for school. Boy, how important that is going to be this year, just about talking to them about wearing masks and, you know, not getting close. And parents can play a key part in making the transition, this year transition, smoother and helping schools out just by talking about this and maybe even role-playing at home.
Wouldn't that be great? Good idea, Ted, that parents educate their children and help them understand the value of wearing their mask, washing their hands, and keeping their distance. This is a culture shift for us. You know, these are things we're not used to doing all the time. But these are valuable measures right now to prevent the spread of COVID-19. And parents could really help by spending time with their kids about that. And, you know, so talk to them about getting on the bus and keeping their distance and wearing their mask and washing their hands. Those are all good sound practices that will help prevent spread of disease to their children and to others.
Right, and as parents, you can set a good example by wearing your mask and not complaining, and just setting it up, because for any of these programs to be successful, any of these plans that come out by the schools, it's going to take masks and it's going to take social distancing and washing of hands and all of that for this to work.
I agree, and I wish everybody would demonstrate that modeling of wearing their mask and washing hands. Not everybody is doing that.
Well, and when we first started talking about this, and you know, and you set it up as, you know, you're doing it for the other person, I just never expected to see some of the opposition to the masks that we've seen, because We have seen it's worked, and in areas where it's not being used, those are some of the areas now that we're seeing some higher numbers.
Yeah, there's plenty of good evidence that the masks work to help prevent the spread of disease from the person who's diseased to others. We're talking about cloth masks now. You know, in the medical setting, folks wear masks to protect themselves, but that's in the medical setting, and that's generally with a surgical mask or an N95. In the public, we wear masks to prevent the spread of disease from us to others. So that mask over our mouth and nose inhibits those respiratory droplets that contain the virus from spreading out and reaching other people around us. So it's a good idea. I encourage folks to continue doing that, at least until we get a vaccine, Ted.
Until we get a vaccine, won't that be a happy day? When we get a vaccine, I guess it's like getting a flu shot. How long does it take for a vaccine to take with a person?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question with COVID-19, Ted. You know, the human studies are being done now. There's some being done in Africa and in China, and I think in Canada as well.
Okay.
So that research will be coming out soon. And, of course, what they do with these human studies is that after giving the vaccine, they do a series of antibody tests, so a blood test to determine when the antibodies begin to occur and at what level do we have an immune response. So I could tell you for the flu vaccine that immune response occurs fairly early and is long lasting. And we hope that will be the case with the COVID-19 vaccine.
It's It's all new. Just like you, it's we continue and I know we continue to be surprised at some of the things that happen. Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District here on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll talk about every week we end. I'm going to give you plenty of time this morning, not give you 30 seconds. We're going to talk about reviving our community. Dr. Donald Stern here. We'll be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Dave the Computer Guy saying thank you, Fredericksburg, for voting Techs in the Burg the best in the Burg in internet technology. It is such...
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. For those who are vacationing, Dr. Stern, any kind of advice and how to stay safe while on the road, especially if you're either driving or flying?
Well, sure, Ted. And this is my opportunity to ask you some questions.
Uh-oh.
Because I understand you're going on vacation here for a few days.
I am.
Let me ask you. Here's the questions I have for you.
Okay.
Is COVID-19 surging where you're going?
It is. It's higher than it is here. It's not one of the hot spots, but it's a little higher.
So if it's a little higher, then I suggest you be just a little bit more mindful about those infection control measures that you have control over.
Mm-hmm.
Washing your hands, social distancing, just being a little bit more careful, not more worried. Just a little more careful. So let me ask you, is COVID-19 surging in your own community?
My own community here? No.
Yeah. So it's not. So there's not this high risk of you then carrying the virus to that community where you're going. I'd still wear a mask so that you protect others from the possibility of you having the disease. But no, we're not a high risk area. The disease is not surging in Planning District 16. Will you be able to social distance while you're traveling, and at your destination?
Yes, and I've already told them, and I have already thought it out that we are going to social distance. Absolutely.
It may be difficult for some airlines, I understand. They're still cramming people into some airplanes.
Yeah, I've heard that.
That would be a little bit of concern to me, but I understand you're driving, so good for you. Are you in an increased risk group?
Yes, with parents who are older, so yes.
Ah, okay, so there's you're going to be seeing your parents. They're in a risk group, so you just want to be a little bit more careful with
mm-hmm.
them. And not knowing whether you have the virus or not, it's reasonable to keep your distance, wear your mask. And this is something, you know, just what the term we've used is reasonable practicality. You know, we're concerned about the elderly and those with underlying medical conditions. Those are the folks who need to be most careful as well. Do you live with someone who's at increased risk?
No.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, it's reasonable to follow the practices that we've talked about, washing hands, hand sanitizer, wearing a mask, social distancing when you travel, and pack your mask and hand sanitizer. You may have some trouble still finding those things on the shelf. So you need to go ahead and pack those now. Make sure you have them with you.
I have.
When you go out to eat, you may want to consider, you know, go out to eat. Great. But you may want to consider it safer outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many restaurants now provide seating outside. That's a little safer than inside. So here, just apply the principles of reasonable practicality on your trip and enjoy yourself.
So did I pass? Do you think I'm ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I've got the hand sanitizer. I've got the wipes. I've got everything. I've got some gloves in the car. If I have to pump gas and don't have, can't get to any of that. So I am ready.
Okay. I did want to note that we will be doing more community testing, so folks need to stay tuned. I believe that we're trying to set up something for Spotsylvania County within the next couple of weeks. For folks who otherwise have difficulty accessing testing from the local pharmacy or their local medical provider.
And as far as we always, we have closed the last few weeks with reviving our community. It's pretty simple if we all participate and show some discipline.
Sure, Ted. That revive our community is an acronym for ride it out. R is ride it out. That we've got six more months. Just hang in there, folks. Be patient and participate in helping to prevent spread of disease. E is endemic. This virus is endemic. It's around. We need to learn to live with it and work with it now. V is for vaccine. We're going to have a vaccine. There'll be a major I immunization campaign, and we need to make sure we vaccinate those who are most at risk first. And E is for everyone has an opportunity to participate and help protect our community, protect your family, protect your school, protect your church. By just participating in these sound infection control practices.
We've been doing it. The numbers are good, and I think you do. You look around the country, and you just think, we don't want to be in that situation. You and I don't want to have these conversations and kind of be moving back and talking about that. I'd rather talk about good numbers and vaccinations rather than what we should be doing.
Right. I don't think anybody wants to hear another executive order from the governor telling us we got to kick back again and be more restrained in our businesses, in our schools, in our interaction with one another. So if we employ these general infection control measures that we personally can use, social distancing, good hand washing, hand sanitizer, wearing the mask, we can substantially reduce the spread of this disease.
Well, and we started the show by talking about the case, a case in the health district, the multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, and the child has recovered. But again, it shows us, like you said, that this the virus is here, and even though a lot of us are, if we get it, we're likely to recover. It's still here. It's still an issue, and we can't let up.
And it can impact all of us, not just the elderly. So be mindful, employ reasonable practicality in your daily life.
And I guess the thing to really the kind of the closing thing to remember here, like we have talked about before, is think about others. In all of this, you don't want to be the one that spreads it to somebody who does have a compromised immune system or is vulnerable, and that's just not something that you want to be. You don't want to do that.
That's right. It's not about you. It's about other people, and that's what a lot of these measures are for: to protect, not just protect yourself, but protect the others. So really appreciate the time, Ted, to talk to folks in the area. Appreciate this time that you allow us to advise folks. And you might want to ask them if they want to send in their questions. They could text you, I believe.
Yep.
And maybe we can address some questions of the public in the future.
As we go along. Yep. Dr. Stern, I appreciate you, Dr. Stern, and your staff for being available during this time. We will talk again soon. Thank you, my friend. I will wash my hands and stay safe while I'm on vacation.
Good job.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health
District. On News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.